say, you know, if that's the way they're going to go. They said, we don't need it. Okay. So they're going to go with plan B. Bring the rocket out vertically instead of horizontally and then raising it to vertical. Anyway, other comments about New Glenn before I move on? WS1. Okay. Just want to bring up thousands of satellites going up. And, you know, they serve a lot of purposes. You know, for weather, for geolocations, and even amateur radio. You know, there's satellites galore. SpaceX has the Starlink system, and Blue Origin will soon, things go right, have their LEO broadband system. China's working on their broadband system. But there's all the satellites, the Iridium satellites, they're still up there. And one of the things that our government was using was the prediction of what goes on in the water, in the oceans. And they have these sensors, hundreds, in fact, probably about 1,000 different sensors from different locations, Pacific Ocean, you know, Atlantic Ocean. And they all collect data for quite a few years that they're doing this. They've been putting, into the location probably $500 million worth of work to put these fences all around the globe. And present administration has decided shut them all down. That's it. You know, the government has put these things into place, taxpayers have paid for it and everything. And everything's working fine. But all of a sudden, now they're going to shut all this down. And the purpose of doing that, from what I'm reading, is they think, well, it's outdated, you know, we don't need it anymore. But the end result is you're going to lose all this data for years. You know, you've had constant data coming in on global warming and everything. That could all go out the window. And unless they restart it up again in the future, and then if they do, then they're going to have a gap of information. You know, best way to see what's going on is continuous information. It's also, going to put less of a use for these satellites, like Iridium is popular for these sensors out in the ocean. So, that's a shame, too. So, what's going to happen, I don't know. If they could, some other group comes in to try to stop this. Last I heard, they're going to go ahead with shutting that down. Bad enough, they've pretty much knocked out the NOAA and all of that, But I hope it gets reversed. Any comments? WS1. Okay, nothing heard. Air leak on the International Space Station is still a problem. It's going on for years now, I think 6 or 7 years. It was creeping up at one time to getting close to 2 pounds of air per day that they were losing. They managed to cut back to less than a pound, and they've been holding that for a long time. So recently, they noticed it's now up to 2+ pounds, and that becomes a very serious problem. you know, if they allow it to continue. And the reason for it is the Russians have a big module up there, living quarters, bathrooms, you know, their main living quarters is the Zvezda module. It's one of the first that, well, it's actually the second Russian module that was put up when it was first installed in, you know, early 2000. And it does have a docking port in the back. The Russian side is considered like the back of the International Space Station, where the American side is considered front. American, the European countries that are all involved. You know, we've got the front end with mostly with the solar panels and power system. Russians have the tail end. They now have, you know, pretty much control the attitude or the speed of the space station. They need to speed it up in the back of the space station. In the Zvezda module, they have four big thrusters that have a fuel all the time, and they could ignite when they need to move the station. Let's say if a meteor or a space junk is coming by, they could accelerate out of the way. They can accelerate if they need to get into a slightly different position if a spacecraft is coming up to the space station. So it has multiple purposes. You know, it's living quarters and everything for the Russians, for the three Russians that are always there. But it also serves as a place where they get fuel, and they get fuel from the Progress cargo vehicles that come off the dock. And, you know, as fuel gets low, they'll send up another Progress vehicle with a lot of fuel on it, and then they'll pump it into the space station's tanks, and this way they always have enough fuel. They also need to get the space station to a higher altitude every now and then because of the rarefied air up there, little molecules that are hitting the space station. Eventually, the space station starts to slow down. If nothing was done, if they didn't reaccelerate it, it could eventually deorbit. So, of course, they've been doing that for decades. You know, shuttles used to go up there, and they used to push the space station higher to a higher orbit before the shuttle would disconnect, all of that. So the back of this space station has this docking port where a Progress vehicle would dock, or even a regular Soyuz crew vehicle would dock. They would dock then between the Zvezda module and the docking spacecraft. It was like a little vestibule, a little space. And the reason for it is the spacecraft has a door, a hatch, and the space station has a hatch as well. So they dock, and the vestibule in between, you know, after docking is a vacuum. So they have to pressurize it first. They pressurize that. Then they're able to open one door and then open the other door, and then they can go in, or they can bring cargo into the Zvezda module. The way it was designed, but what's happened, you know, over the years is that this vestibule area has developed leaks, some kind of a crack. And, you know, they're always having trouble finding it. They're trying to reseal it, but because they wipe it, it's always leaking. So what they do is a cargo vehicle to it, and let's say it's got fuel, they'll fuel up the space station, and the cargo vehicle is now attached to it. You know, before this leak problem, they used to leave the doors open. They used to both doors open. If we need, you know, something else, we'll go back to the Progress vehicle, take some stuff out, bring it back and forth. They used to leave the both doors open. They used to have a crew, vehicle that would land land there as well. And that was the Sawyer's vehicle. Same thing, leave both doors open and we go back and forth. And in fact, they had, you know, according to the flight rules, they have to leave those doors open in case there was a problem. We have to get into the Sawyer's vehicle real quick, close the doors, and fly away. So because of this leak, they've done away with actually having a crew vehicle there because they're not allowed now to leave the both doors open. They have to make sure that the door on the space station is closed. This way the vestibule area could eventually leak out that air and becomes a vacuum. And they only, you know, need to do it every time a private vehicle comes up. So that's the story with the leak. Now, it's gotten to the point where it's leaked up to around 2 pounds plus. And the Russians said, "Oh, we're going to fix it. We think we know where one of the cracks are. We're going to get to it. And how we're going to get to it is we're going to take a saw. And we're going to saw some equipment, things that are out of the way, and this way we can get to it and seal this whole thing off." NASA doesn't like that idea. So you know, you're going to try to do that. We're going to put our people into the Dragon spacecraft. You know, there's a total of 7 people on board. And flight rules are there has to be a seat for everything. There's a disaster, a fire or something. Every have a seat to undock and eventually fly back to Earth. So they decided to take the 4 people that came up on Dragon, put them into Dragon. And then there's another guy, Chris Williams. He flew up with the Russians. But, he's an American. So they temporarily put him into the Dragon capsule. And they sort of closed the door. And in case something bad happened when the Russians were throwing something apart, our Americans would have been safe. The 2 Russians that were left, they might have a problem. But, you know, they're a little riskier than NASA is. So that's what happened. You know, I only have one really. Like you're supposed to have a seat for everybody. They only had 4 seats on Dragon. You know, what would have happened, you know, if there was a problem? You know, 4 people fly back in their spaces, and well, by the way, they all had to put their spaces on, and which would have been fine, but there was no extra seat. You know, would this guy just hang on? I'll have to read about that. And I'm sure there was a plan for that, I hope, if they had to, you know, come down and, you know, re-enter the atmosphere. One guy without a seat. Who knows? You know, by the way, SpaceX, when they built the Dragon crew vehicle, they actually built it to actually carry 7 people if they wanted to. They never did that. The most they ever brought up is 4, and the most they ever brought down is 4 as well. Any questions? This is WSON, SpaceNet Report. Okay, nothing heard. I just want to mention the X-59 airplane. I keep talking about that over the years. It's called the Quest, developed by NASA, built by Lockheed Martin on the Skunk Works in California. The X-59 is designed to fly faster than the speed of sound and also have the ability to fly over land and not have a typical sonic boom back on Earth. And the whole setup has been developed by NASA. It's got like an engine above the fuel, designed to mitigate any kind of sonic boom. You know, what they expect is maybe a little, like, thudding noise, you know, but not this gigantic boom that you would normally hear. So they've been testing this now for the last, I guess, 3 or 4 or 5 months. You know, they roll it out to the Air Force Base in California, and they've taken it up on, I don't know, countless flights. And each time they've gone up, well, you know, originally they go up and they land without, you know, putting the wheels up, and they fly again, put the wheels up, fly again, increase the speed little by little for every flight that they make. And finally, last week they got up to Mach 1.1, which is just over the speed of sound, 719 miles an hour or something, at 45,000 feet. And they're going to increase that little by little. I think within a week or two, they're going to get it up to 1.4. And once they get it to the point where they're comfortable with it, and X-59, you know, is really solid, they're going to start running tests over land, and they have certain locations where they're going to monitor the sound and see what it sounds like. And the idea of this development is somewhere in the future, you know, private companies could take this technology and actually duplicate it and create, you know, public transportation. You know, like the Concorde. Concorde wasn't allowed to fly over land because of the blast that, you know, people would hear on the Earth. So what Concorde did is they take off, let's say, from Kennedy Airport.
That time complete.
France or London, they would, you know, get over the Atlantic Ocean, and then they would break the sound barrier, get up to, 1,300 miles an hour, and, I guess around twice the speed almost of the sound barrier. But this plane will be able to go over land with little or no noise. And we'll have to see what happens with that development. It's one of the things that NASA does. You know, it's the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. So the aeronautics part is still heavily involved with NASA for now. Hope they don't change that. Anyway, that's SpaceNet report for tonight. We'll continue on next week, hopefully. I don't know if anybody made it to the Weimark ham fair. I know I didn't. I had too many other things to do. But I haven't heard anybody talk about that. I wonder how they did with all the power outages throughout Nassau County. There was thousands of them. In fact, I just looked before the net. There's still another, I guess, 1,000 households that are out. Due to a lot of trees that are down, hit the lines. So, you know, that's a shame. Anyway, I don't know if that had any effect on ham fair or not. Yeah, this is WS2N for the SpaceNet report for TechNet. We'll try to be on tomorrow night. Maybe we'll find out more about the ham fair tomorrow night's net. And I hope 8:30, not like this net that always comes on at 8 o'clock, but yeah, that's always followed by George KD2FIU with the swapping shop. That's always followed by Radio Newsline. But now I'm going to turn it over to Roy. Roy, over to you. I wonder how your transmission is now. I wonder if you're on RF or back on All Star. AC2GS, WS2N, SpaceNet report.
Hopefully I'm back on RF. So let me know if you hear me.
You're doing great. Love it.
Okay, very good. Yeah, unfortunately, I have a new mixer for my hardware mixer for my computer, and it just kind of crashed at the very end of my transmission earlier. So sorry about that, guys. As always, let me leave you with some words of wisdom. One from our own Dick K2RW. He always advised people to be kind to each other at the end of each and every technical net. And then, of course, there's good old Epictetus. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So keep your mind open to new ideas, but not so wide open that your brains fall out. Have a great week, everyone. Stay safe, be well, and if you can, possibly join us next Sunday at 8 o'clock when we do this all over again. This is AC2GS formally closing this episode of the Limark Technical Net, and I will be clear after I say Slava Ukraini.
Great transmission. And WS2M will be clear.
Roy, you out there, buddy? K2HZE on the Worldwide DX Link. Roy, if you don't mind, buddy, I have a station, and I've been explaining to him how we do the cross-bridging and all kinds of stuff. Can you say hello to him before you leave? And his call sign is Kilo Echo 9, Fox Juliet Tango. Kilo Echo 9, Fox Juliet Tango. His name is Cameron. I just wanted to show him the ins and outs of the network and the capability. If you don't mind, back to you, Roy, and say hello.
Okay, hello, Cameron. This is Roy, AC2GS. Good to hear you. Tom's got a great setup where he's hooking everyone up with everyone else, so it's nice to hear you.
This is Kilo Echo 9, Foxtrot Juliet Tango. Good to hear you, Roy. I just got my technician back in April and just upgraded to General just yesterday, and Tom's been showing me all this cool technology and all these amazing things that I've always heard about, but I've never seen in action. It's some pretty cool stuff. Back over to you.
Ah, very good. Congratulations on your new general class, and hopefully you know how to hook things up to contact us. If not, I'm sure your mentor there will help you out.
Roy, if you don't mind, can you explain to Cameron what he's coming in on about Limark, just the repeater and everything and the information? And Cameron, I want you to listen to this because my radio is linked on to a repeater in Long Island, New York. It's across the water from me. And then, of course, you got Roy out there. Every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern, New York City time, you're coming in on the W2VL-R repeater, which is Limark Long Island Amateur Radio Club. So, Roy, over to you. I really appreciated this. I don't mean to bother you, but I was showing this guy on the Freestar Network what we can really do, and look at these audios. So, Roy, back to you. Just let him know how he's coming in on the W2VL network, and I greatly appreciate this. Over to you.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, most of the time what I'm doing is I'm going to a direct all-star link that Limark has. It's W2VLA. I go to their node. Their node connects three different repeaters, their Echo Link connection and their All-Star connection. And I talk on the repeater there. And Tom hears it locally on RF usually, but he could also access using All-Star. Tonight, unfortunately, my PC hardware mixer kind of failed at the very, very end, so I shifted over to RF. So right now I'm talking to the W2VL repeater in Glen Oaks, and Tom Smith picking it up.
All right, KE2HZE in the group. Roy, I really appreciate it. Thanks to Limark and everything. I really enjoy it. It's kind of funny because since I'm 12 years old, when I got my first license, which is novice, I've been using the repeater. So very good. And Cameron, back to you, buddy. You're learning a lot. I know it's a little weird. I'm going to show you some other apps. I'm going to show you DV Switch Mobile. I'm going to show you Peanut. I'm going to show you Vox DMR, all stations. This app is amazing, and it's very new, and it's called Vox Victor Oscar X-Ray Delta Mike Romeo. So, Roy, back to you in 7-3, buddy. I'm going to disconnect Limark and everything. I don't want to hold them open, and I greatly appreciate it. You have to understand, buddy, I'm only trying to introduce people to what you guys have to offer and everything because it helps me in my amateur radio career. And I love to share the wealth, and I love to pass the torch. And I'm running 40-plus gateways. Back to you.
Very good. Well, thank you for the opportunity of connecting me with other amateur radio operators all over the country. I do really appreciate it. And I'm sure Cameron's going to learn a lot of great things from you, and hopefully we'll talk down the line. 73.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much. Let's pass it around, K2HZE. I got another couple of minutes. My shift starts at 7:30 a.m. in the morning. Everyone listening, look me up on the QRZ, K2HZE. You're going to see all the different gateways, connections. It gives you the talk group number, how to connect to it and everything, and we greatly appreciate it. All right, Cameron, you made some good contacts tonight, and back to you, K2HZE.
This is KE9FJT. I really appreciate the opportunity and you taking the time to show me all this cool technology. It's definitely a lot, but I've been audio recording most of it, so that way I can go back and listen to it. That way I don't forget any of it. But I gotta get heading off here. I gotta sign off. It's 11 o'clock here in Indiana, same as New York time. But I got to get heading off here, and thank you for the opportunity, and I'll see all you, hopefully to hear all you guys again soon. 73.
All right, Cameron, and everyone listening. I'm going to say 73, but I'm going to give one last call. Any other stations anywhere, any questions, comments, and everything. And, Roy, thank you so much. It's a wonderful net. I really enjoy it, buddy. 7-3, anyone want to jump in before we disappear?
Hello, Tom. Norm again, K8GOA. Hey, you ever been out on a 75-meter, 3.892, copy?
Yeah, Roy, I can actually do that. I can go to 75, I can do 80 meters. Roy, and everyone listening, I'm dead serious. You guys can control my radio. It's just that it's a little bit of a learning curve, and there's two ways it works. It works on Android, and then you have to pay a $10 fee. It goes to the creator of the app. If you have a Windows machine, you can download this for free. So back to you, buddy. And everything, like I said, look up remotehams.com, all one word, remotehams.com. If you proceed to register, the username is your amateur radio call sign. It doesn't have to be capitals, and there's no dash Tom, Dick, or Harry. So you guys register, you send me an email at my call sign at yahoo.com. I'll throw you on the radio. It's going to take us about 10, 15 minutes, whether you're using the computer version or the Android. and we appreciate it. So back to the group. Any questions, comments, any other stations? If not, I'm going to say 7-3, and we'll begin this tomorrow.
Hey, Tom, K-A-T-O-A, Norm again. One other question. If I run a remote state, if I run a remote, you know, through my computer to my radio, I always thought you had to run through a computer. You can actually run them down through a phone. Back to you.
Okay. In order to run a remote station, all right, you have to set up a program. The program I'm telling you guys about, my radio is registered as one of the servers. Okay, that's number one. Let's just say you want to edit your radio and you want to let people use your radio. You have to go in and set up the server setup of remotehams.com. What that server setup is going to ask you is, what radio are you using?